the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben. This is Johnny. Johnny, how are you this week?
Yeah, I'm doing good, Ben. How about yourself?
Terrific, thank you. So at the end of last week's episode, Johnny, you said that match day two had a lot to live up to after the action and the drama of J1 match day one. What do you reckon? How did match day two acquit itself?
I think Friday night kind of led us down a path of thinking it was be every bit as good as match day one. And I think maybe overall that the quality wasn't quite as good as in match day one. But I think a lot of results have kind of thrown things up in the air. So I think we've got a lot to talk about tonight. But the implications of a lot of results might be more interesting than the games themselves. But yeah, I think no teams have won the first two games, which is fascinating. So they're all bunched up and yeah, can't wait to get into it. How about you? What did you make of round two as a whole?
Well, as you say, yeah, Friday night certainly got us going and it got us fired up for the weekend, the rest of the weekend. But yeah, I think some very interesting results on Saturday, no question. But yeah, there weren't an awful lot of goals to speak of unless you were down at the real estate agent in front of the station stadium. But yeah, a special weekend for a number of teams, including Machida Zelvia, who won for the first time ever in J1. And we'll get to that quite shortly. In total, yeah, seven teams won for the first time this season over the weekend, including two of the promoted teams. And along with Machida, the other one of those was Jubilo Iwata, who were, below par and outplayed at home by Vissel Kobe in match day one at the Yamaha Stadium. But they headed up to Kanagawa and to Kawasaki's Todoroki Stadium on Friday night. And Johnny, well, yeah, in the result that we all saw coming, of course, Iwata ran out 5-4 winners after an absolute barn burner of a game. And well, all the punters that went along to Todoroki, well, they certainly weren't expecting 9 goals at kickoff, but Iwata made, to put it bluntly, Johnny, the absolute perfect start. Their supporters will have been in dreamland as they were 3-0 to the good before half an hour was played.
Yeah, and anyone who's listening to the pod and didn't watch the highlights of round one against Vissel Kobe, I assure you I was not making anything up. I didn't want Jubilo to be bad, but honestly, they didn't look like they would score. They played football for a whole week. And then, like you say, racing into a 3-0 lead at Todoroki was absolutely unbelievable. I mean, I guess in terms of the approach of Vissel and Kawasaki, Vissel were far more direct against Jubilo. They were much more vertical, whereas Kawasaki a bit more languid, a lot of sideways passes. I think, yeah, 726 passes in total, which I think would comfortably get you in a top three of the last 5 years of J-League stats. And then, as Kawasaki knocked it around at the back, Jubilo were able to pressurise them at key times. And yeah, they took their chances. I think they only had 9 shots in the whole game, and they scored 5 goals. The first one is a fantastic strike by the young Uemura. It's only his second professional game after graduating Waseda University. And then yeah, Roy Germain. I guess I'll be the one to steal Sean Carroll's tweet about he'd never scored more than 3 goals in a single J1 season before this year, and he got 4 in one game, so he can put his feet up now for the rest of the year. But now he just did not miss. I think while the first goal from Uemura was a bit of a cracker, I think the second and third goals, I mean, they owed as much to good Jubilo attacking as to bad Kawasaki defending. I think the second one especially, Hirakawa dispossessed Sasaki down the Jubilo left and then knocks it to Matsubara, and all the Kawasaki defenders are drawn over to their right-hand side. Matsubara crosses it in, and Jermaine's left, but basically unmarked. I think you've got Takai and Miura are there at the back post, but Miura's basically left with 2 Jubilo players. It's absolute chaos. And then the third goal, you know, Kawasaki's defence is like statues. It makes Jubilo look like Pep Guardiola era Barcelona. Nakamura, who's previously looked very good in J2, but I think with Shonan and Fukuoka, he's just been okayish in J1. He looks like prime Iniesta, threading the ball through the eye of the needle to Matsumoto, back to Jermaine. And yeah, the Frontale brothers are just standing there admiring it. And then what the Frontale fans, what Toru Iniki, what everyone must have been thinking at that point. 3-0 down with no time on the clock to a team that many people, including myself, think or thought we're going to go back to J2. Absolute chaos in the J League on Friday night at Todoroki.
Yeah, that's perfectly summarised there, Johnny. And yeah, I couldn't think of a better way to describe it myself. Absolute chaos energy, J-League 2AT. But if the first half hour belonged to the visitors' Jubilo, well, the next 30 minutes belonged to the hosts' Frontale. And by the time an hour was played, they were back on level terms. The Frontale fight back began in the 36th minute when Edison volleyed in after Yuki Yamamoto's shot was blocked, and they went bang bang after the break. Edison headed in a Tatsuki Seko corner in the 55th minute, and 4 minutes later, yes, it was 3-3 when Marcinho smashed in from close range after Edison's shot was saved. So yes, Iwata taketh and Iwata giveth back, Johnny. Or was this a result of Frontale shaking themselves out of this funk and finally realizing that they're half decent at football after all?
I think the goal in the first half was crucial, because if they're going 3-0 down at half time, that that is really, really tough to come back from. But even just getting it back to a 2-goal margin and you have got the goal, even though I think there was a very good counter-attack with Marcinho and Yamamoto, but there is that bit of luck when Yamamoto's shot is deflected basically right into the path of Erison, and he takes a very nice volley, and the Erison march to the Golden Boot is still going on. So yeah, I think that was crucial just for the halftime team talks, and it also puts the kind of a bit of fear into the Jubilo side, like, are they going to come back? And then the second half, it actually had me remembering, I think last year Gamba won 4-3 at the Todoroki, and they were 3-1 up, and Kawasaki came back with two very quick goals to make it 3-3. And I think the Marcinho's goal was actually very similar to their equaliser in that game, where there was like numerous chances, and finally the ball got forced over the line. But I think I was reading Neil's blog today, his blog post about it, and he made the point that Seko actually took the corner, not Wakizaka, for Erison to head in. But then Wakizaka was back in corners after that. So a bit of an interesting power dynamic there. Lovely free kick and a wonderful header. So that's 3-2 for Erison. Not quite up to Jermaine levels, but he's on the coattails. And I think when it gets to 3-3, then you think, there should have been 30 minutes to go. And we'll come to that in a minute, I'm sure. All the momentum with Frontale, you think they're going to go in, they're going to win 4-3, 5-3. But this being Chaos Energy J League and this being this game, completely unpredictable what was to come next.
Yeah, absolutely remarkable stuff. And Edison looked certain to score in the 72nd minute, only to see his shot heroically blocked by Matsubara. But then Iwata retook the lead from the spot after Germain was taken out in the box by a sliding Junsung Ryong, the referee somehow failing to see the contact, let alone the DAZN commentators who had about four or five replays to check. But justice was done after a VAR check, Germain stroking his penalty into the top corner to seal his first ever J1 hat-trick. And as Johnny said, he's already matched his best ever season haul in J1 at this point of the game. And he's to go on and be the hero even later on with his fourth of the game. But let's just stop there, Johnny, because, I mean, this is a cast iron penalty, isn't it? I can't believe the referee hasn't given it live while he's watching it. And he was extremely well positioned as well, I thought, to see it.
Yeah, he does an experienced referee, and I think there's Kawasaki Ultras down the other end would have given that as a penalty. It was like so obvious. In a game full of shocks, I think maybe the biggest surprise was the fact that the referee for some reason decided to rely on VAR rather than his own judgment, which is, as we'll see a few minutes later, he had no problem giving a penalty from even further away that looked less, or it was a penalty, but that looked less of a obvious penalty than this one. So yeah, I don't know if he had a temporary brain fart and thought, I'll just rely on VAR for this. I really don't see, because you can quite easily give the penalty and then VAR will take it away. So I'm not really sure what his thought process was. Was he exhausted watching all the goals like we were?
Yes, he had arm fatigue for pointing to the center circle, I suppose, by that point of the game. But yeah, I guess all the cool kids in match day two were getting VAR assisted penalties. It seemed to be a running theme that, yes, began on Friday night. And then, well, yes, the referee did point to the spot of his own volition in the 85th minute with Shin Yamada, the Frontale substitute, winning and then smashing in a penalty of his own after contact from Ricardo Grassa. But yes, certainly not as obvious contact as Germain had come under from Jung earlier on. But then, well, yeah, more madness ensued in stoppage time. In the first minute of time added on, Germain netted after a Matheus Peixoto nod down, but VAR spotted a pair of handballs in the box. Firstly, Frontale's Yusuke Sagawa was the first culprit as he tried to shield Germain off the ball. But then Asahi Sasaki's attempted clearance appeared to ricochet off Germain's hand before he stroked in. So I guess two wrongs made a right for Iwata. Johnny, I can't believe I messed that up. It's the most common saying of all time. But anyway, after the VAR check, the final decision was not a goal to Iwata, but a penalty to them, as Sagawa's handball was the first instance, as I mentioned. So Germain had a chance to win it in the 97th minute, and indeed he dispatched his second penalty of the second half with a minimum of fuss. And again, that's his fourth goal of this game. The posted 9 minutes of stoppage time eventually stretched to over 17, but Iwata hung on to celebrate a famous victory. And as I said, Johnny, the scoreline we all saw coming at kickoff: Kawasaki 4, Iwata 5. And, well, is it possible to summarise this and what it means for these two teams going forward? Or was this just a mad, I was going to say 90 minutes, but yeah, it was more like 120 minutes of football. It's like they played extra time almost when you factor in the stoppage time in the first half as well. So are you taking anything away from this game into the next couple of fixtures for these two clubs, or was it just a complete anomaly for you?
Good question. I think from a Jubilo perspective, fantastic to get 3 points, because they would, I think a lot of people, including probably themselves, would have looked at Wiesel at home and Kawasaki away and would have rated the chances of them having no points and potentially like no goals scored and three or four against as being quite high when the fixtures came out. So the fact that they've got 3 points from the first two games against those two teams is obviously really, really positive. I do kind of wonder though, like, They played very well, but everything they hit went in the back of the net. And there's also that kind of danger, isn't there? You often see, like, you know, in something like boxing or MMA, when there's a shock result and the underdog kind of shocks the favourite, and it often turns out that the favourite's actually not giving the underdog the respect that they deserve, and they've kind of underestimated them. And then when the underdog, you know, I'm talking about Buster Douglas, Haseem Rahman, someone like that, but when people actually take them seriously, that they never really kind of live up to those expectations. So I think Jubilo's got the league's attention with this result. So I don't think anyone's going to be taking them lightly in the next few weeks. So that's going to be a real challenge for them to overcome. I mean, Rio Germain, fantastic performance for 4 goals. But yeah, he has his career record for a reason. You know, this is one game. We can't throw away what he's done. He's been around for a few years. I think that this Jubilo have to make sure that this is the high point of their season, but it doesn't all fall away to nothing from here. They have to build on it to some extent. I think this is a bit of an anomaly, but they need to make sure it's not completely out of kilter with what the rest of the season is. And Kawasaki, you know, I mean, we get Jubilo completely wrong last week, and I think there's a few things we've got wrong this season. So we should probably pat ourselves on the back when we get the chance, because I think when we talked with Neil in pre-season, we pointed out that having a team with Ienaga, Wakizaka and Yamamoto all in it will be very good going forwards, but might be a bit lacking defensively. And I think when, you know, the one game I think they've kept the clean sheet this season was in the Super Cup when they played what Oniki called the B team. But when those three have played, they've scored a lot and they've conceded a lot. I think they conceded 4 in the Asian Champions League and then 5 in this game. And if you look at those Jubilo goals, I think and the first half, especially the second and third one, come down the right, where Ian Aga and Wakizaka are the sort of midfields and wing options, and Sasaki's a left back playing on the right. So, you know, I think there's going to be, like, when you have a result, they only lost by one goal, but conceding five at home to newly promoted Jubilo, even J2 didn't score that many. They shared the goals throughout the team. I think Jermaine was a top scorer last year with nine goals, so he's almost halfway to last season's total already. I think they'll have to make changes. That Ienaga, Wakizaka, Yamamoto, I think, good as they are going forward, at least one of them has to go out the starting lineup. And I think defensively, I pointed out last week how young the defence was. I think Maruyama is going to have to come in at centre-back, maybe in place of young Takai. Jesse L seems to be injured again, and Kuramaya's injured as well. I think long-term, if Jesse L is only going to be able to play 10 or fewer games per season, they're going to have to replace him at some point with a new centre-back. I think Maruyama's a quick fix. And then probably bringing in, like, you know, as it's Seko for Yamamoto, or I assume Yamamoto would be the one to drop out. And maybe even bringing in Zay Ricardo for Tachibanada to shake things up in the midfield. And maybe a Tono or Yamada out right wing, just get more energy into the team. And need to be a bit more direct, not just passing the ball from side to side. But, I mean, I'd still say that despite this, I think Kawasaki will finish above Jubilo in the league. And this will be an anomaly to some extent, but it's definitely, I think, people will expect a bit more from Jubilo now than they did. And yeah, I think training would have been very interesting. I think a few harsh truths might have come out in the Kawasaki dressing room. And I probably wouldn't like to the upcoming opponents, because I think there might be a bit of a reaction. But anything you'd add to that, Ben?
Well, yeah, I mean, we're still obviously in overreaction theatre territory after match day two. But I think, yeah, anybody who had predicted a rise back up the table for Frontale this season might be a little bit worried about the state of their J-Pred after two match days. They come from behind victory at Shonan in match day one. And then, yes, this spectacle that Kawasaki put on Friday night. As you say, obviously terrific going forward at times. And, yeah, in Edison, they have a potentially lethal striker and a contender for the Golden Boot, no question, as you've already mentioned, Johnny. And we all know how good Marcinho is if he can stay fit as well. But, yeah, there's definitely concerns in the midfield and in defence, just for a change. Yes, deja vu very much for Frontale supporters. And, yeah, just an amazing occasion for all of the Iwata fans who turned up on Friday night. And they will have absolutely celebrated right through the weekend, I'm sure. But, yeah, they won't be sneaking up on too many teams, I don't think, at least in the next month or two after they have just put five past Frontale on the road on Friday night. But yeah, a stunning result to kick off the match day. The other game on Friday night, well, the result was a surprising one, but the scoreline certainly not as large as the one across Kanagawa at the Nissan Stadium. Yokohama F. Marinos hosted Fukuoka, and F. Marinos had never lost at home in the league to Fukuoka, but wouldn't you know it, there is another apple cart upset as Fukuoka finished this game 1-0 winners, thanks to a goal early in the second half from Kazuya Konno. The first half hour of this game was dominated by chances at either end for El Burr and for Wellington. El Burr, of course, one of the F. Marinos' danger men up front. He headed just wide in the fifth minute and then curled a shot against the bar in the 17th minute. In between those two chances, Wellington saw a header saved by William Pope. And then right on the half hour, Wellington headed on target again. But again, Pope was equal to the task. Early in the second half, Anderson Lopez's low drive from the edge of the box was saved by Takumi Nagaishi. And shortly after, the visitors took the lead. Masatoshi Shigemi's cut back from the left found Connor and his first time shot deflected off Eduardo and flashed into the net past a wrong footed Pope. There was a superb low save from Nagaishi to keep out Jan Mateus' low shot with 4 minutes left to play. An absolutely brilliant turn in the box by Jan. He nutmegged a defender with his back to goal and was able to fashion a chance. But unfortunately for him, it was a little bit too close to Nagaishi, who saved particularly well. And this is unfamiliar territory for F. Marinos, Johnny. They were only held scoreless 6 times in 2023, and they would have been coming into this game, I think, fairly confident, having beaten Fukuoka home and away by a 6-0 aggregate in their two league games last season. But yeah, unable to find a way past Nagaishi, and I guess their struggles from the first, 85, 86 minutes or so against Verdy in the first match day repeated. This time they were unable to break through a cast iron Fukuoka defence to make things interesting late on.
Yeah, I think if you throw in their two games from the ACL against Bangkok United, we've got kind of four games of evidence from what will hopefully be a long and fruitful partnership between Harry Kewell and Yokohama F. Marinos. But I think if you're a Marinos fan, I think you've got reasons to be concerned when you look at any of those four games, but particularly as three of them, the home games against Bangkok United and this one, and then the away game at Verdy, like you just mentioned, the opponents have been able to stifle them quite successfully. I know they're kind of bedding in this slightly new system with the one holding kind of midfielder and two players in advance. And for this game, they brought in Nam Tae-hee, so it wasn't three just kind of conventional midfield anchors. But yeah, they're still struggling to really create chances. And you kind of get the feeling from this game, you know, if you've been watching J-League for a while, and if you said the scoreline Yokohama F. Marinos 0, Avispa Fukuoka 1, you could kind of imagine how the game would go. Marinos had a few chances, and then they got a bit frustrated. I think we need to mention that conditions looked quite dreadful, and the pitch cut up quite badly into a bit of a quagmire in the second half, especially. But you know, Fukuoka, they learned a lesson from last season. I think it was near the back end of last season, a rampant Marinos went and won 4-0 in Fukuoka, but led by Tatsuki Nara at the back. And I'm sure Neil Debenham would join me in saying I think Kawasaki might be regretting letting him go, because he organised them very well. There was no Douglas Grawley or Daiki Mia in the squad again, so he was a leader in defence, and then Maia in front of him was also a leader there, that kind of strong base. Yeah, they stifled Marinos well, and it seemed like the longer the game went on, and especially when it was 1-0 to Fukuoka, that Marinos had kind of ran out of ideas on a kind of sodden pitch. And you know, what was kind of checking in the stats, the best chance according to kind of XG, it looked like it might actually have been offside, so the stats are slightly skewed in their favour. But there won't be pressure on Harry Kewell, like, per se, as in terms of, there's absolutely no question of him losing his job or fans calling for his head or anything. But yeah, he could have had a much better start, because yeah, the second best for nearly all the game against Verdy, and then yeah, held goalless at home by you know, Fukuoka. They finished seventh last year, and they won the Levan Cup, so this is not a bad team. But in their home opener, I think Marinos would hope to have done much better. But yeah, credit to Avispa, like I say, defensively very sound. And then one of our five, Johnny's five ones to watch, Connell on target, one of two from that list who got goals this weekend. I mean, he does slightly scuff it and it hits off Eduardo and it goes in, but I really like how they created the space, the two central midfielders, Maia and Shigeme, working it down the left, and the cut back, and he's got time to shoot, to pick his spot. So there's always a chance when you have, you know, you get a shot in that area, that something like that can happen, can deflect and go in. So yeah, fantastic stuff for Fukuoka, and they've now played, you know, Sapporo and Marinos, two teams. We don't know how strong they'll be this year, but they're kind of perennial high scorers, and they've held them goalless, like I say, without Drolley and without Mia. So yeah, I think that they would have been cock-a-hoop going into the weekend. Marinos now have their ACL games coming up, and yeah, Shandong Taishan put away Kawasaki Frontale. They know where the back of the net is. So, yeah, very, very interesting times at Marinos. They have tweaked the system. So, you know, what's going to happen going forward? What did you make of this one, Ben?
Yeah, a resolute performance from Fukuoka, and we obviously got used to those last season as they ground their way to a number of victories, but ultimately were excellent value for their seventh place finish. And as you say, the cup win and indeed the semi-final appearance in the Emperor's Cup as well. So yeah, they're well and truly proven at this level now. So I don't really think any of these sort of results that they're getting in the early stages should be surprises to anyone. I guess some people might have expected them to slide, maybe gravity to kick in somewhat, and they might slide down the table a little bit. But as you say, the two defensive performances have been excellent so far. And yeah, even with Grolley and Mia out of the picture at the start of the season, as you say, Nara is carrying the can and leading the way at the back. And indeed, yeah, Fukuoka, the only team not to concede a goal through two the first two match days of the new season. For F Marinos, well, there'll be some who have already started the warning signs flashing with the change from Muscat to Kuhl. He obviously deserves more time to get his methods sunk in. And yeah, the ACL is obviously still taking a lot of their focus at the moment. But there's no question that their start to the season in the league, F Marinos, has not gone to script, and Kuhl will want more from his side in the weeks to come. All right, so yeah, two really interesting games on Friday night for a very different reasons. And then on Saturday, we had five teams winning for the first time this year from the seven fixtures in total played on the Saturday. And we'll begin with Machida Zelvia's historic victory away at Nagoya Grampus. The scoreline was the same as at the Nissan Stadium on the Friday night. It finished 1-0 to the visitors. Machida Zelvia beating Nagoya Grampus 1-0 thanks to a 21st-minute goal from Shota Fujio. The goal came after a long throw from the right was headed back out to Junior Suzuki. His cross was headed or perhaps shouldered in by Fujio from about 6 yards out. But he didn't mind, and neither did Go Kuroda and his staff. The Zelvia staff, celebrating a terrific start to this game. 5 minutes later, it was almost a carbon copy. It was almost 2-0 as the Suzuki crossed again. But Osei Hun headed wide. But again, Johnny, the theme of this game, as it was last week, Nagoya's horrendous display at home against Kashima, was their complete lack of a cutting edge. And indeed, through two games to start the new season, they have a grand total of one shot on target from both games in total. It was yet again a very, very disjointed display, and it was capped off in the worst way possible when Takuji Yonemoto miscontrolled under no pressure just outside his own box in the 87th minute. Fujio stole in, and Yamamoto brought him down just outside the box and was shown a straight red card. So any chance of late drama from Grampus was basically quashed then and there by Yonemoto's straight red. But yeah, I think the home punters at that stage are probably just about given up, Johnny, because as I say, once again, it was another toothless display from Grampus.
Yeah, I think like the Marinos Fukuoka in this game, they had the same score, but I think this was a much more comfortable 1-0 win for Machida. They scored early, and then they never really looked threatened at all. And Nagoya, I know it's only round two, so we shouldn't really be throwing out statistics like they mean that much. But you rightly pointed out that they've only got one shot on target. They're one of only two teams that have yet to score a goal. And considering they've played two games at home, a lot of the kind of Tohoku or more northern teams don't play a game home game until round three. So they've had two home games, and they've been behind for most of those games. So you would naturally expect with the players they've got, the big crowd behind them, that they would actually, after going behind, they would have taken the initiative, and other teams would be happy to kind of cede a bit of advantage. But still, with all of that and all the attacking talent that they have, I think that Nagoya, the total 13 shots overall in the first two games, the worst in J1, and they've also given up, I think, only two teams have had more shots against them. So I mean, this isn't bad luck. Like, they've missed a hatful of chances. Their goalies had a magic day and that they just haven't been able to force the ball over the line. Two very, very shaky performances. I mean, even started from the team lineup. Ha Chang Rae came in for his debut, and Yamagishi was on the bench. He was fit enough to make the bench, but Mikuni managed to start ahead of Inoue, which was surprising. And then what I pointed out last week about Inagaki getting overrun in that midfield pivot, rather than bringing Yonemoto in alongside him, he just replaced Inagaki with Yonemoto, and like you've just laid out, that did not end well. So I assume he's going to go back to Inagaki just there by himself next week. It really looks like, despite having all that talent at his fingertips, Hasegawa's run out of ideas. Because, I mean, all I saw was, again, my man Masui came on late on as a sub, and he seemed to be the only kind of attacking player that got pass marks. It was a nice shimmy and a shot just wide, and then a weak Nogami header. But I think Kosei Tani in the Machida goal, I think he seldom had many easier days' work. I mean, yeah. Nagoya, I don't want to be laying into them, but you know, we all of these warning signs were there at the end of last season. They were all picked out by us in the pre-season preview, and I think even the biggest Nagoya hater couldn't have imagined it being such a disastrous start. Two home games, no goals scored, four conceded, worst amount of shots on target out of everyone in the league, terrible defending. Yeah, Kenta Hasegawa is very, very early in the season. And yeah, Nagoya do seem like a bit of a conservative club. They're not going to make changes easily, but yeah, he is under big, big pressure, isn't he?
Well, yeah, you'd have to think so. It's just been absolutely dreadful. And yeah, where do they go from here? How do they buck up their ideas? Oh, I don't know. I mean, they obviously have brought in a number of players during the off season. There might be the odd excuse thrown around that he's still waiting for them to gel, but I mean, you know, we know about some of the quality attacking players. So, I mean, Kasper Juncker must be pulling his lovely mane of hair out in his private moments because, he's just been absolutely starved of service. And for a player of his quality, I wonder what he would give right now to have Mateus back in the Grampus squad. But they've certainly got an awful lot of improving to do, and that is a massive understatement. But for Machida, the fact that they've drawn with Gumba in the first game, in the first game, Johnny having led for most of that game, and indeed going a man down on the hour, which I guess contributed to them running out of legs, and obviously a brilliant free kick from Takashi Usami earned Gumba a point in that game. But then, yes, to go away for your first ever away fixture in J1 and a big ground, one of the storied grounds in the top flight of the Toyota Stadium, and to, as we said, basically control things and completely stymie some quality attacking players, Juncker especially, is a massive feather in their cap. And I guess it gives credence to many people's theories that Machida are going to thrive rather than struggle at this level.
Yeah, I should appoint all Machida supporters an apology. I got too busy ranting about how bad Nagoya were, and I did not credit Machida, who were, they were really good. And again, like you say, last week against Gamba, I think if they hadn't got the red card, then I think they quite possibly would have won that game, and maybe even by more than a single goal. So they've definitely caught the eye the first couple of weeks. And yeah, they look like we're very unsure pre-season where they would be. I mean, at the moment, they're shaping up like they could be in the bottom half of the top half or somewhere around the middle. They are very direct. They're very in your face. You saw with that the goal, the kind of long throw from Suzuki, it's cleared out, as I kind of laid out with the game last week against Gamba. You know, they're very good at picking up second balls. Yeah, very switched on, but very well drilled. And I think actually the two changes they made from the Gamba game helped him in a sense. Like, we picked out Cento was not really a holding midfielder, and he was kind of asked to play there. So he's been forced to choose Shimoda, who came on the back end of last week's game. I think he was more of a better fit in there in the middle of the park. And also Na Sang Ho, unfortunately, he got injured quite early. And then they brought on Fujio and they took him off last week as well. But he started and got the goal. So I think he's a good forward. And I think Mitch Duke was on the bench and he came on in the second half. So I think you can argue the lineup on Saturday was actually slightly stronger than on the opening day, and they do have a lot of options. So they're not going to be too badly hit if injuries or suspensions strike. They do have options in a lot of the attacking areas. So very, very positive for them. I think really good to start with 4 points in two games. You know, you can say, well, Nagoya were struggling and Gamba weren't that good at the end of last season. But as we said last week with the newly promoted sides, it's very easy to dominate a game and then end up not winning. So they've taken points, and there's absolutely nothing bad about picking up points early in the season. It makes everything that comes later on that much easier for the coach to get his ideas over and the players to kind of gel and buy into what he's trying to do. So fantastic. Yeah, really, really good story for Machida coming up. I think I'm sure the fans would have preferred if the first win had come at home, but to come in a fantastic arena at the Toyota Stadium against a big famous team like Grampus, who've won J1 in the past, have been in the top half of the league, well up the top league for the last kind of 4 or 5 years. Brilliant achievement, and I hope all the kind of fans and players really enjoyed their weekend after this great victory.
Indeed, indeed, well said. So yeah, congratulations to all the Zelvia supporters, Aylan and Dave, especially friends of the podcast, and absolutely tremendous for Zelvia to be, well, joint top after match day two is, quite an achievement in your first ever J1 season. All right, well, 1-0 was definitely a fashionable scoreline in this round of games, no question about that. So the next one of those results that we'll come on to was at Vissel Kobe, where the defending champions played their home opener against Kashiwa Reysol, who, of course, struggled mightily in 2023, while Kobe were going from the bottom half of the table all the way up to the top and were crowned champions for the first time in their history. And after a typical late meltdown for Reysol in match day one, well, I guess, we were probably all expecting something similar to happen again. Johnny, my notes for this game begin with a triple change made by the Reysol manager in the 67th minute, because two of those subs combined to set up to score the winner. But I know that you said in our private text that you had watched the first half of this game. Is there anything especially that I'm leaving out, or can I start with the goal that ultimately won this game for Kashiwa?
Yeah, I think the only thing I'd mention from the first half is, you know, we've already done the Jubilo game, and I was able to watch the full kind of Jubilo VCL game last week. And just as Jubilo were almost the opposite of what they were last week, so were Vissel. I was kind of effusive in my praise of, you know, how they kind of put to bed rumours that they might be a bit sated with success and they wouldn't be quite as up for this year. But, you know, after going to Jubilo and being right in their face and aggressive and you know, putting on a strong performance, this game, yeah, they just didn't really get going. And the first half, you know, was a bit of a non-event, a bit of an arm wrestle. It was quite physical. I know Mr. Mkhitaryan had some things to say about that, a bit unsavoury on Twitter. But both sides were given it equal lumps from what I could see. But yes, a scrappy arm wrestle that I think Kashiwa just edged. But yeah, absolutely. Please start with the final third of the game, because that's where most of the action came.
Indeed, indeed. So yeah, Masami Ihara made a triple change in the 67th minute, and it bore fruit with the 7 minutes to go, but it was set up especially by their main man up front, Mal Hosoya, whose ridiculous backheeled flick down the right touchline as he was falling to the floor released one of the substitutes. It was a J1 debutant in Takuya Shimamura, and his ball across the box was turned in first time by new Reysol signing Kosuke Kinoshita, whose shot crept under Daiya Maekawa's grasp and went in off the near post. So with the 7 minutes left, Kashiwa had the lead. But yes, their supporters know this script back to front. And after Shimamura wasted a chance 2 minutes later, well, I say wasted a chance, I mean, Mateus Tool has made a terrific clearing header off the line. But I mean, Shimamura had almost all of the goal to aim at and looked set to crown his debut with a goal that surely would have sealed the 3 points for Reysol. But after after taking his time to steady himself and to make sure he was evading Maekawa, his shot was headed off the line by Matthias Tuula. And instead of 2-0, it was still 1-0 to Reysol. And yes, their supporters behind the goal must have been thinking, oh no, here we go again, especially as they had to sit through a nervy ending in which Taisei Miyashiro and Jean Patrick missed presentable chances, and their goalkeeper Kenta Matsumoto pulled off a stunning low save to keep out Yuya Osako's header. But they did indeed see it out for a first victory of the new campaign, and they are also joint top on 4 points, Johnny. It took them until match day 7 to win their first game in 2023, Reysol, so they're absolutely flying.
Yeah, yeah. Rare bit of positivity in recent seasons for the last season and a half anyway for Kashiwa. So yeah, again, I hope their supporters enjoyed the game. I'm sure that they watched the last 10 or 15 minutes bit behind their sofas. If anyone did that, I don't blame them at all, given what they've been through. Like you say, after going 1-0 up and then that chance for Shimamura, I think that they'd be well versed in what usually happens next. But now, it's interesting what you said about Hosoya's back heel. I don't know if you've seen a different angle from me, because I thought it looked a bit lucky, if anything. But I think the good news for Reysol fans is that then it led to Shimamura setting up Kinoshita, and it wasn't the kind of tried and tested Savio-Hosoya combination that usually brings Kashiwa goals. Mm. I mean, I know that Maekawa, he's been in the Japan squad, he should do better. It's not, from behind it looks a bit harder than it does from the kind of regular TV angle. It's a decent enough hit, but you feel like he should probably keep it out. But yeah, hopefully that does the world of good for Kinoshita's confidence, and also Shimamura, who was on for his debut. He looked lively. I know, like Gary Irwin on JTET said, he tends to look quite lively, but sometimes his kind of output is slightly lacking in terms of goals and assists. So hopefully this is the start of something special for him. But yeah, when Reysol started to kind of throw the kitchen sink at Reysol later on, you thought it's just a matter of time before the equaliser comes. But yeah, full credit to Matsumoto pulling off that great save at the end. And you know, this week they wisely kept Yugo Tatsuta on the bench rather than sort of bringing him on to trip over all the defenders like last week. But yeah, Reysol, you know, 38 game season. They've lost early. It's not the end of the world, but it's definitely not the start they would have wanted. Where you know you're the defending champions. This is your home opener against a team that finished second bottom last year. Kashiwa's a big name, and they've got players that can hurt you. But this is not a great result, and they'll look to bounce back quickly. I know Yuriki might be out for a while. He's picked up some sort of injury, but Muto seems to be back. I think maybe tactically, I kind of phrased that the midfield trio again of Ogihara, Yamaguchi and Idiguchi last week, and it really seemed to work away from home, kind of closing down and putting pressure on that Jubilo midfield, and they dominated. Here, it just didn't seem to work. I don't know if it's like being at home and there was maybe a bit more incentive on them to make the play, and because last season they used mostly like Sasaki or Ide, like players who are quite at home in the forward line. In one of those kind of inside half positions. And yeah, this week, none of the central midfielders were as impressive. And yeah, credit to Kashiwa. I thought Sekine, the young rookie right back, he looked quite decent again. And the kind of midfield combination, Takamine and Shirai, they more than held their own against that Vissel trio. So yeah, for Kashiwa fans, they'll be quietly hoping, like touch wood, that the jinx is broken and that they're going to be able to hold on to Leeds. Yeah, so it's a good stuff for them. Four points from two games, especially this one be a tough one. Vissel not quite back to the drawing board, but yeah, definitely there's a bit of work to do before next week's game.
Yeah, that's an interesting point on their midfield, isn't it, Johnny? Because yeah, I mean Ogihara, Yamaguchi, and Itaguchi, all good players, but I do agree they're a little bit similar in you know the way they go about things. So yeah, it's definitely food for thought, and yeah, maybe it might be worth chopping and changing, as you say, especially in the home games where the onus is more on Vissel to attack rather than soak up any sort of pressure. So yeah, a terrific result regardless of Vissel's settling in to a new season for Reysol, and yeah, their first victory of the season. And, a terrific goal by Kinosha. And I tell you what, Johnny, I don't reckon you're giving Hosoya enough credit. I know it does look a little bit clumsy, but I think, as he's falling to the floor, he kind of knocks it up to himself. And then with his right boot, I think he plays it down the line for Shimomura. I don't know, maybe some of the listeners can chime in the comments or on Twitter and let us know your perspective on things. This sounds like a little bit of a cross or a shot, my old arguments with Sam. So I wonder... how the listeners will vote on this one. All right, so there was another 1-0 on Saturday that I'm sure Johnny can't wait to talk about. But while we're on a little bit of a theme here, we'll go with the away teams picking up their first victory of the season on Saturday. And the third and final one of those was Shonan Bellmare away at Kyoto Sanga. This finished 2-1. To the visitors, who took the lead in the 15th minutes through Satoshi Tanaka. He hit a volley from 25 yards that seemed to travel in slow motion as it bounced through traffic in the box after a corner was punched away by Gu Sung Yun. But indeed, Tanaka's volley ended up in the net at the far post. But Sanga were only behind for 4 minutes. Shinosuke Fukuda's ball in from the right was controlled by Yuta Toyokawa, who turned and sent a snapshot through a defender's legs and in off Daiki Tomi's right-hand post for 1-1. And this looked a terrific game from the highlights, especially in the first half, Johnny. Both teams going close several times before the end of the first 45, and Shonan spurning several chances on the counter, but they finally won it late on after Daiki Sugioka's corner was touched on by Kazuki Oiwa and volleyed into the net from a yard out by our man Akito Suzuki in the 82nd minute. Yeah, we wondered who would fill Yuki Ohashi's boots at Shonan, especially in terms of trying to get the goals that might be able to keep Bellmare up. It's a lot of pressure to place on such a young striker like Suzuki, but he had a number of chances in this game and kept on going and finally got his reward and indeed the winner with 8 minutes to go.
I was looking at his stats just before we came on here, and four shots and four last passes. And I think what was most impressive was, you mentioned a lot of those chances at both ends, but basically after Tanaka's goal, I think all Shonan's chances seemed to be either Suzuki teeing up Lukian or Lukian teeing up Suzuki. So I think that apart from the 3 points in the victory, I think that's the key takeaway from Shonan fans, is that there's a sort of suggestion that might be a partnership to work on, and something that could produce a lot of goals and a lot of chances for Shonan. Suzuki seems like a confident young guy. He's talked a big game, like, put pressure on me, expect me to score goals. He said that in pre-season. And he really should have scored that one-on-one chance in the first half that he put wide. And then Gu denied him, I think, in the 51st minute. But really good movement, and he couldn't really miss with the chance. And, talking about brilliant back heels, I think there's no denying that Oiwa meant this back heeled volley from the corner. And Kyoto, they just get caught out, and he's played onside, and tap in from what, two yards out, a yard and a half out. So I was personally happy to see him get a goal. He's joined Conno, and two of my five to watch got goals this weekend. So I have to admit to following them slightly after I've chosen them. But I think this is a really good win for Shonan. You might have felt a bit aggrieved last week. They lost 2-1 at home to Kawasaki. They had that goal out offside by the kind of a bit of Hiroyuki Abe's backside. They were very, very close to getting a point from that game. So, a really good 3 points against a potential rival in this one. Still no Song Bum-kun. He was on the bench again, despite Tommy's mistake last week. I'm wondering when he might come back. But, I think reasonably positive start for Shonan. They've definitely been practicing their shooting from outside the box. I think that's two goals in two games, Ikeda and then Tanaka. To keep getting goals from outside the box, and the partnership between Akito Suzuki, one of three Suzukis that seem to feature regularly for Shonan, between Akito Suzuki and Lukian starts to blossom, then why can't they pull away from the bottom three? I think Kyoto, again, Kashiwa last week, they got a last gasp equaliser that they just about deserved. And then, they've just gone down 2-1 to Shonan. So 1 point from two games, it's not a great start, and you know, we don't know how good that point at Cashewa will be. I think this is a tough one to take. Choke EJ, he would have wanted to impress against his former side, but yeah, I'm kind of left remembering a question we got in the preseason pod about is he the man to really take Kyoto on? And I kind of felt in this game it might not necessarily be that person, because you've noticed that Yamaguchi at Shonan, he has experimented with a different system and younger players, whereas Cho, I think, has a better squad than he's ever had at Kyoto, and he's just playing the same kind of style of football. So I'm interested to see how that goes. I know that Yoshinori Suzuki, they brought in from Espoirs to be at centre-back. He's not been in the squad the first two games. I assume he's injured, and Sam's favourite, Hisashi Apiatawi, has been in there. And it's not been too bad, but that's definitely an area they could improve. But I get the feeling the style of football will stay the same. Toyokawa got his first goal of the season here. Hara's not really done much yet. Still very early days, but me, you and Alan were very positive in Kyoto in the preseason pod. I have to say, after two games, it's still overreaction theatre. But yeah, I'm much less positive given what I've seen in the first couple of rounds. So yeah, but big ups to Shonan. Kyoto, I think, still got a lot of work to do. So is there anything you would add to that?
No, I think you've summarised things fairly well there. Yeah, there's obviously, a lot more needed from Kyoto, especially up front with, Hara, as you say, he's basically done nothing so far, and they're still betting in Marco Tullio. So, they'll hope to be better in the coming weeks. But, yeah, it's a shame for their supporters that they weren't able to build on the feel-good factor of that dramatic late equaliser away in match day one. But, yeah, I think here the story is Shonan and, Akito Suzuki. You were right to put him in as one of your league-wide ones to watch. And, he's got himself off to a terrific start here with the winner in Shonan's first victory of the season. So, Belmare, I'm sure, had a nice return on the Shinkansen back up the Tokaido line on Saturday evening. And, they celebrated their 3 points with gusto. Not in such a celebratory mood, I'm sure, were Sapporo, their players and staff and supporters, after a really disappointing result on Saturday away at Tosu. This was the other game in the match day that was that was full of goals, but unfortunately for Sapporo, all four of them were for the hosts, Sagan, although there were a few caveats that we'll come to. Marcelo Rian gave the hosts the lead after he was sent clear down the left by Saul Kawahara and fired under Takanori Sugano in the 14th minute. Just past the half hour, Sapporo were given a penalty after a VAR check for a handball against Kim Tae-hyun. But for the second straight week, Tosu keeper Park Il-gyu saved from 12 yards. Yuya Asano's poor spot kick was easy pickings for Park. 8 minutes into the second half, Marcelo Rian had a header from a corner hacked off the line, but shortly after, Sapporo went down to 10 men after Toya Nakamura was shown a second yellow for a foul in midfield. Then Tosu were given a VAR-assisted penalty just past the hour after Yuto Horigome was upended by Ryota Aoki, with Vinicius Araujo making no mistake from the spot for his first J1 goal. And things went from bad to worse for Consadole late on when Daihachi Okamura deflected a Keiman Togashi cross into his own net in the 83rd minute, and Wataru Harada sent a daisy cutter from 25 yards across Sugino and inside the far post deep into stoppage time. And indeed, it probably should have been 5 right at the death, but Togashi dinked over the advancing Sugino, but just wide of the post almost straight away after the fourth goal was scored and the game restarted. But 4-0, I think a dismal scoreline for Sapporo, and it's a really disappointing way to finish their stay down in Kyushu. I wasn't aware of this, Johnny, but Naoya Kanai posted in our Patreon only line group that Sapporo had actually stayed down in Kyushu for the latter stages after the latter stages of their training camp, rather, and that's why they played Fukuoka away and Tosu away in the first two match days. So, yes, they're returning home for their first home game of the season in match day three, and they'll be hoping for some home comforts at the Dome, no question about that. But, yeah, it's safe to say it would have been a pretty quiet trip back after, a very disappointing result.
Yeah, I think Sapporo and their supporters need to hope that this is just one of these games that everything got vomited out in one go. Like, everything that could go wrong did go wrong. Yeah, I think there was a red card, missed a penalty, own goal, conceded a penalty, goal let in right at the end just to rub things in. I mean, I think 4-0, you know, fair play to Sagan. They had their foot on Sapporo's throat and they didn't take it off, but I think it seemed like it was a reasonably competitive game until the red card, and then the penalty and the second goal came right after the red card, and that really kind of finished things as a contest. Obviously, Tosu, they changed the system slightly from last week's defeat to Niigata, going from a 4-3-3 to a 4-4-2, and Vinicius came in alongside Hian up front. And you know, it's easy to forget about Vinicius. I know he's come from Imabari in J3 last season, but In the dim and distant past, he does have Brazilian like age level experience, and he's played for Valencia like a decade ago. He played a few games for them, so he definitely does have pedigree, as you can see with his kind of composure for the penalty. He showed Asano how to do it. So interesting to see. I think, you know, Kawhi is quite kind of progressive. He'll change depending on opposition, and you know he obviously targeted this game because with you know Sapporo had two away games in a row. Tosu, two home games, Niigata and Sapporo, teams that they probably fancied to finish in, you know, no higher than mid-table. After losing the first game, I think it really was vital that they took points from this game, and to get a 4-0 win is absolutely brilliant for them. You know, my favourite Park, again, stepping up to the mark, two saves in two games, even if this one was maybe a bit easier than last week. And yeah, I didn't really like the penalty award. I know I'm sounding like a broken record, but Kim Tae-jun, how's he meant to jump in the air without like using his arms, and the ball just going to hit him while he's raising his arms to jump? I think justice might have been slightly done. And then I think there's about three fouls by Sapporo leading up to the Nakamura red card, and you can't really have any complaints. But yeah, after that, it's just everything went wrong that could go wrong. And not to jump ahead too much, but yeah, the supporters' home opener is against one of Misha Petrovic's former sides, Urawa. And I don't think I'm overstating it too much to say that, you know, if they were to lose comfortably, say a 2-0 or 3-0 to Reds, you know, he's got a lot of money in the bank. He won't be fired, and you know, they don't have any fullbacks anyway. It's not like they could just bring in a new coach and play 4-4-2 or anything. But I think if Sapporo lose comfortably to Reds after this game and the tame 0-0 at Fukuoka, I think Petrovic will be facing the biggest crisis point of his supporter career, his very long supporter career to date. Would you go along with that?
That's a fair point. Yeah, he's certainly been there for a long time. He's seen a lot. He's taken them to their highest ever finish, of course, and he's made them, as Tom said in the preview, he's made them into J1 staples. But it'll be interesting if things go well from bad, as in Saturday, to worse in their home opener, and things don't seem to be progressing at all. Yeah, it'll be interesting if there's any sort of reaction from the supporters first and foremost, and then I guess ultimately the head office and the front office rather, and when they decide to act. But it was definitely a dismal end to their stay down in Kyushu, no question about that. And from a Tosu perspective, I have to apologize to Yuki Horigome and his family. I called him Yuto. I was thinking of his former teammate Yuto Iwasaki, who is of course now transferred to Fukuoka. But yes, Yuki Horigome did win that penalty that Vinicius Araujo scored from. So yeah, 4-0 to Tosu it finished. And then to the final winners from Saturday, Johnny, and well, you must have wondered if you were ever going to see Gumba win a league game of football again. But yes, it finally happened at home against Niigata before a bumper crowd of over 28,500 at the Suita City Stadium. But again, it was a set piece in inverted commas. It was a spot kick from Takashi Usami, who scored both of your goals thus far. So yet to score a goal from open play this season, but most definitely a precious 3 points for Gumba, all their players, staff and supporters.
Yet to score a goal from open play this season, but perhaps more importantly, given how bad the defence was last season, also yet to concede a goal from open play this season, with the new Shinosuke Nakatani-led backline doing pretty well. I mean, honestly, this is not the greatest game of football you'll ever see. If anyone hasn't seen it, I don't really recommend you go back and watch it. It was a very strange game in that Gamba were basically on top for almost the entire game, but they created very few clear-cut chances. I think only the Kishimoto shot in the first half that got past Kojima and was blocked by his former Tokushima teammate, Arai. I think that was the best chance they had from open play. Niigata, I think they had five shots in the whole game, and two of them were just at the end. So, I mean, essentially, the first 90 minutes, they were averaging a shot every 30 minutes. And I think the only one inside the box was actually a decent chance for Eitoro Matsuda. Gamba got caught out a little bit, and he shot across Ichimori, who saved well. Which kind of it got me thinking. I think last season, I think Gamba did very well against Niigata and Kawasaki, two teams with a kind of slow, patient build up. I think they took 10 points from 12, but the one game they did drop points in that four was at home to Niigata, where again they dominated, but just didn't kill them off and ended up drawing 1-1 because Mito scored a goal of the month. We scored the goal of the month to equalise, and then they hit the post in the last minute. So they got a bit of a wake-up call with that Matsuda chance when they were almost in complete control but really struggling to make chances at the other end. And then they get the penalty. I think it's a good decision. You know, Arai was a hero last week with the winner at Tosu. He kept Kishimoto out, but unfortunately he does trip Kurata. And Barr correctly awarded the spot kick. And yeah, Usami took two from two, a free kick and an important penalty. So yeah, I talked to a couple of people who were at the game, and I just watched it on the zone, but they were very impressed, I think, with the defenders or the new players. Nakatani was the name that was mentioned most. Ichimori was obviously very good. And Riku Matsuda, he came in at right back for Riku Handa. And I think having those three players who've, last season, or Nakatani and Matsuda's case, they've never been at Gamba before, coming in from different kind of more winning cultures than what's been the case at Gamba, I think that really helped. And you also had Neto Lavi came in for Dawan in midfield, and he's still not at his best, but I think I like the look of him with Takuma Suzuki. Again, he was the one who caught my eye the most, but very busy player, but very neat and tidy passing. So yeah, a lot of positives. Even Welton came on in injury time for his debut and had a couple of nice touches when Gamba went into the 4-6-0 formation, made famous by former Scotland boss Craig Levine. But yeah, it worked, and they saw it out. So, Gamba, a lot to build on. I think, last season, the game against Machida, they would have lost that game and they would have drawn this game. So we've got 4 points, which I think is very important because next week's game against Marinos has been moved back for a month to help them in the ACL. So if you'd only had like 2 points, you'd be in the pack now, but then you go a game behind, then you can end up through no fault of your own being kind of drawn into the relegation battle. So 4 points is a really positive start. I think for Niigata, two away games, 3 points from two games is not bad. I think the concern for Matsuhashi would be the performance. They just weren't an attacking threat. Taniguchi got a lovely goal last week, was completely anonymous. Hasegawa, who I rate very highly, came in a disappointment. They just were barely able to lay a glove on the team that had the worst defence in J1 last season. Granted, there's three new players in that defence and one in front in the midfield, but very, very tame from Niigata. They've got a home opener. I'm sure there'll be a big crowd at the Big Swan. So the fans there will be hoping to see a much better, much more energised performance from them. But yeah, 3 points from two away games is not a disaster. Gamba fans, I think, pretty happy. Niigata fans, they'll be hoping for more next week.
Indeed, and I'm sure you're well aware of the stats, Johnny, but just for the listeners, yes, this was Gumba's first league win since match day 24 in mid-August last year. Of course, they lost 8 of their last 10 at the end of 2023, including the last 7 in a row. So after the draw in match day 1, it was their first win in 12 league fixtures. And, well, yes, Danny Poyatos, I'm sure, would have celebrated with an extra strong sangria on Saturday night. All right, so we'll finish off Saturday's slate with the 2-1-all draws that took place. The first one we'll cover was at Ajinomoto Stadium, where a crowd of over 32,000 rocked up to see FC Tokyo entertain Hiroshima, who were the better side for most of this game, I must hold my hands up and say. And yeah, if it wasn't for a slight miscommunication or just a plain cock up by Yuki Ohashi, they would have taken the lead in the 19th minute, I think, Hiroshima. We mentioned last week, Johnny, that Kato and Ohashi had the makings of a burgeoning partnership. Well, yeah, unfortunately, they got in each other's way, or indeed Ohashi got in Kato's way in the 19th minute after he broke down the left, cut back and sent his shot on target. But Ohashi, in trying to evade his shot, instead deflected it out for a goal kick with his legs. So that was a bit of a comedy value there. 4 minutes later, Kato volleyed straight at Goal Hatano, and his follow-up was blocked by Kashif Bangunagande as Hiroshima started by far the brighter side. But I guess the remainder of the first half was relatively even, but Hiroshima mostly on top. Into the second half, a low blast from 25 yards by Makoto Mitsuta was pushed away by Hatano. That was in the 64th minute, and from the resulting corner, the ball skimmed off Hayato Araki's head and hit the hand of Diego Oliveira. After a VAR check, Hiroshima were given a penalty, which Ohashi fired down the center to give his side the lead. So, yes, yet again, another VAR-assisted penalty decision. But Tokyo were only behind for less than 2 minutes after a Yuto Nagatomo made an overlapping run and crossed from the right. Ryotaro Araki held off his marker and lashed in on the turn to match Ohashi and score his third of the season. In the 75th minute, there was a tense time again for Tokyo supporters after another VAR check, after Masato Morishige caught Ohashi in the box. The ref was summoned to the monitor, but no penalty was given as Ohashi was offside, or at least that was the referee's decision, as he returned to the pitch. Hayato Araki headed against the bar for the visitors in the 81st minute, but then appeared to concede a penalty 3 minutes later when he caught Kota Tawaretsumida as he raced away down the left and went past Araki and into the box. The referee pointed to the spot, but the decision was overturned to a free kick on the edge of the box by VAR. The referee was not summoned. The decision was made entirely by VAR, and yes, the decision was changed. I got in touch with my mate Graham, who was at the stadium, who said that both times that the referee went over to the monitor, Johnny, the replays were shown on the big screen, but for the overturned penalty for Tokyo, that the referee was not called over for it. There was nothing displayed on the big screen. So I don't know whether that's a policy or not, but indeed that's what went on inside the stadium. Frustrating one for Tokyo supporters to take. As I say, we were by no means deserved, in inverted commas, to win this game. But when you're given a penalty for a clear foul by Araki, and then to not be able to see a conclusive replay and the decision just simply overturned was a frustrating one. And I know that's a word I often use to describe Tokyo and their games. But one of those, I think. I guess I'll just give my thoughts on this game and throw it over to you if you have any comments afterwards. If you'd offered me a point before the Cerezo game, and I would have taken it. And the same thing here. So we've played two teams who finished above us in the table in 2023 in the first two rounds. And indeed, in this game, the team I think will win the title. So the fact we were never played off the park. We were always in the game, and with Araki, the quality that Araki has displayed in the first two games, Keita Endo made his debut here and looked good at times and looked to combine with Araki, which is something that, yeah, Tokyo supporters are going to hopefully see a lot of this season. And, well, yeah, simply put, I think Araki has the without wanting to put too much pressure on him after two games. Yeah, he has the makings of the signing of the season. He looks absolutely terrific, and he's taken, yeah, all three of his goals especially well through the first two rounds. So I don't know how much of this game you're able to catch, Johnny, but, yeah, as I say, Hiroshima, the better team for the most part, but, yeah, Tokyo frustrated at the end as, yeah, we thought we might have had a chance to win it from the spot.
Yeah, I only caught the highlights of this one, so I didn't see it as much as you. But I think what you mentioned with the Kit Kato and Ohashi in the first half, I think Kit Kato's face was a picture that told 1,000 words. I wonder what was going through his head when the camera zoomed in on him after that. But it, yeah, as some Fritchie are want to do, they take a lot of shots. They shoot from anywhere. They do tend to outnumber teams in shots, even if the shot quality is not always the best. I think they will be very disappointed in that they took the lead through that penalty. Again, the penalty is very similar to the one that Sagan Tosu gave away to Sapporo. I don't like it, but within the rules, it is a penalty. I think, yeah, Michael Skibber will not be happy that basically within 2 minutes of taking the lead, they were then pegged back with Araki turning his namesake in scoring. So from their perspective, I think, you know, again, it's not the worst result in the world. Going away to FC Tokyo, drawing 1-1 after beating Urawa 2-0. They would have seen that as a tough start, and they've got 4 points. No one's getting any more points than them. But, yeah, I think, you know, I see them more as being with the finished product. They've only really added Ohashi. Interestingly, they didn't make any subs in this game. They just kept the same 11 on. FC Tokyo, yeah, we mentioned, you know, they finished 11th last season, and Araki's come in, and like you say, he's made an instant impact, and you've got Hatano's come back and gone in goals, and then for this game, Endo's come in and played his first game. But essentially, the rest of the players are all the same players that finished in the bottom half last season. So you're still waiting for, like, Ko and Ogashiwa to come in, and hopefully when you've got that kind of core of maybe like five new players mixed with the best players from last season, I think we can look to see FC Tokyo kind of climb up the league. But given how few of the new players have kind of been integrated into the side, I think, yeah, drawing 1-1 is not the worst result, especially I think San Francisco will win the league as well. I guess where you find out what you're really made of is, I mean, we'll come on to Sarazzo in a minute, but they've looked pretty good in their first two games. So you've drawn away to them. You've drawn at home to a title favourite. So it's not too bad. It then becomes what you do against, you know, the teams that are less fancied. FC Tokyo, as we know, have always had trouble against, like, say, Sagan Tosu or teams from Kyushu, Shonan, you know, Jubilo. If you start dropping points against those teams, then these results are not so good. But if you back up results like these with kind of, you know, wins against the sides that are maybe expected to be in the bottom half, then I think, you know, we can see the Klimovsky project start to flourish. So, yeah, I mean, there's probably more questions than answers coming out of this game. I don't really have any much to add about the kind of Tawara Tsumida incident. I was watching it after the fact, so I knew that no penalty was given. So in that context, I just sort of accepted, yeah, it was outside the box, but I didn't see a proper replay, so I would not swear my life on that decision. But yeah, it's one of these things with VAR. I was watching a bit of J2 yesterday, and you know, like, the penalty is given, it's a penalty. The goal's in, it's a goal. Whereas all this now is like, you know, you think you've got a penalty. Yes, we're going to go 2-1 up with 5 minutes to go against one of the best teams in the league. And then suddenly, no replay, just no penalty. It's outside the box. Yeah, I can understand how fans in the heat of the moment and all the passion, big crowd, yeah, that must be really, really a big letdown. I just wanted to ask you one more question, Ben, about the, you know, you mentioned Endo came in and he did quite well, but Morishige was back from, Doi dropped out of the squad completely, and then Endo was in for Tawara Tsumida, and Kimoto came onto the bench. Doi was out of the squad, young Anzai was out of the squad as well, so yeah, a much more kind of senior look to the squad. Did you like that look, or would you have liked to have kept Doi and Anzai involved and maybe Tawara Tsumida in the starting 11?
Well, yeah, I don't know the situation with Doi. So I don't know whether he picked up a knock either at the end of towards the end of the game last week or in training this week, because yeah, if he wasn't going to start, I would have still expected him to be in the 18. So as you know, Johnny, J League teams aren't especially forthcoming with injury news. So if there was something that that Doi picked up during the week, then yeah, it wouldn't be surprising to anyone to not know about it when the team sheets drop on Saturday afternoon. So yeah, I was surprised that he wasn't there, because I think, yeah, Klimovsky was trying to lay a marker down with his decision in match day one to go with Doi at the start of the season. So I'm not really reading a lot into he's back down or not. I don't know. I mean, we know how long Morishige's been at the club, and I'm not sure how he would have personally taken being dropped, being benched for a first year player after he's been at the team for so long. I don't know whether there was any machinations behind the scenes or not to get him back into the team. I certainly hope that was not the case. And I think Klimovsky is, you know, a principled enough man to stand by his decision and to back it. So as far as I'm concerned, Doi must have been out injured, and that was the reason for the change. But again, I mean, he's a good player, Morishige. There's no doubt about that. He might not be Klimovsky's cup of tea at this point of his Tokyo career, but he's always going to do a decent enough job. And for me, the major worry is on the other side of central defence, because again, Trevisan was a little bit shaky. So if there's any way for him to work Doi and Morishige in there together, I don't know. That might be too much of six of one and half dozen of the other for Klimovsky at this point of proceedings. But yeah, it's going to be something that basically I'm going to be checking every time a Tokyo team sheet drops is whether Doi's in there or not, because if he's fit, I expect Klimovsky to pick him from this point on. So I don't know. But yeah, Endo and Tawara Tumida, I'm not sure if there's going to be a pecking order there. You would expect Endo as the, in inverted commas, bigger name player to get the start whenever he's fit and available. So I wasn't especially surprised to see that switch made. But again, Tawara Tumida will definitely get his opportunities this season, I'm sure. So Tokyo's opponents last week were Cerezo Osaka, Johnny, and they looked especially good from what I saw of their game on Saturday away at Kashima. A performance that, oozed attacking quality from what I saw. Kapishaba's volley from close range just before the half hour was poured away by Tomoki Hayakawa. A superb save from the Antlers stopper. Unfortunately for Cerezo, they did lose Lucas Fernandez before half time to injury. And then 10 minutes into the second half, Kashima's two-goal hero from last week, Hayato Nakama, volleyed wastefully back across goal after Alexander Kavrich crossed from the right. And shortly after, Cerezo took a deserved lead when Fernandez's replacement, Hirotaka Tamida, crossed from the left, and Leo Ciara controlled with his first touch on the edge of the six-yard box and fired in on the swivel with his second. And moments later, Ciara headed just wide as Cerezo looked to press home their advantage. But 5 minutes from time, Antlers equalized when Naomichi Wada powered home a header from Shintaro Nago's free kick to earn Antlers a point and, well, keep them top. Of course, they were the runaway leaders after that 3-0 win away at Nagoya in match day one. They're one of a number of teams on 4 points after two games. But yes, their goal difference is slightly better as they're on plus three. So, this was a really impressive looking performance, as I said, from Cerezo, Johnny. And unfortunately for them, they weren't able to hold out at the death. I mean, Wade's header was a terrific one. Cerezo looking the goods on this occasion.
Yeah, but very quietly, Cerezo have been one of the most impressive performers against both the first two games. And you know, given the absolutely flat way they finished last season without really any goal-scoring threat, it's incredible to see them just reinvigorated. And I hope for their sake, Lucas Fernandez's injury isn't too bad, because that, that Brazilian front three of Capixaba and Leo Sierra and Fernandez has looked dynamite at times across the kind of the first game and also the first half of this game. And even bringing Tameda, who's never been my favourite player, on, he seemed to have a couple of nice touches, including a lovely flick to set up Okuno to cross for Sierra for what could have been a lovely second goal. And, you know, the goal they scored, I think that has to, for me, that has to edge out Uemura's opener for Jubilo as goal of the round. Absolutely fantastic counter-attack from coast to coast and brilliantly finished by Sierra. Yeah. Who would have thought? It's the other end. It's the issue that defenders seem to be dropping like flies. I think Shindo was injured, and then Toriumi didn't play in this game, and then Nishio went off. So they're left with Funaki and Yamashita at the end, which is very interesting if they keep losing defenders, because, I mean, if the sports papers are to be believed, the only reason they got Shunta Tanaka is because they promised to play him in central midfield. So how long can they hold off from putting him back into central defence remains to be seen. But that seems to be their Achilles heel, is that they don't have a large squad in terms of numbers, but I think the depth is not really there. There's a lot of good untested players from J2 or, you know, from the youth ranks, so they really can't afford too many more injuries, especially not in defence. But yeah, really good start from them, and going to Kashima with a lot of confidence, taking the game to Antlers, and really unfortunate not to come away with the win. Kashima, really struggled to get anything going in the first half, and then Yuma Suzuki was able to come on for the second period, and as the game wore on, they came more and more into it, and you could say a classic Kashima goal for the equaliser, a free kick, and Ueda just powers in and powers the header home, really kind of taking advantage of the reshaped Cerezo defence. I think for them, for Ranko Popovic, he might not say publicly, but you know, Nagoya away, Cerezo home, 4 points is not bad at all. I mean, pre-season you might have expected it would have come the other way around with an away draw and a home win, but points are points. Maybe as we kind of speculated last week, the last week's result was maybe slightly flattered by how poor Nagoya were, as much as how good they were, and against a sterner test that they didn't look quite as good, which is to be expected, but you know, with Suzuki not fit enough to play the full 90 in either game, Shibasaki out, almost no cover at centre back. Yeah, I think Popovic would be quite happy with 4 points, but put plenty of positives for him. Cerezo only have 2 points, so yeah, they'll be quite disappointed. But yeah, I think a lot of positives for their supporters, and they haven't even really integrated Vitor Bueno, who looks like one of the best signings to me on paper. So if they can get him integrated into that squad and get a Brazilian front four, then you know they might spring a surprise or two at the very sharp end of the league.
Yes, very well said, Johnny. Yeah, they have been impressive in the first two match days. So yes, Cerezo and FC Tokyo, the two teams in the league with the two draws to kick off the new season. And the final game that we'll cover from match day two took place at Saitama Stadium on Sunday, and it was Urawa hosting Tokyo Verde, and that game also finished 1-1. So, yeah, finishing the episode with 3-1 all draws. And, both of these teams have finished match day two with a point apiece after losses in the first round of the season. For the second straight game, Verde took the lead in the first half. This time it was just before half time, after a corner was recycled and the ball crossed high to the back post. Reds couldn't clear, and Yudai Kimura fired in on the swivel from just inside the penalty spot. But after Kohei Yamakoshi fouled Ayumu Ohata, Verde keeper Mateus guessed the right way to his right, but Alex Schultz's spot kick was a laser pointer just inside the post, and Verde had a late heartbreak for the second straight week. Schultz's penalty hitting the net in the 89th minute, and that was it. 1-1 was the final score. So, well, yeah, Verde, if there was a league table for games, if you could finish them after 85 minutes, Johnny, then Verde would have 6 points and they'd be top of the pile. But unfortunately, after their late heartbreak last week at the National Stadium against F. Marinos, they've again lost a lead right at the death here on Sunday. And just a point when they could easily have had six. I mean, we mentioned last week about, you know, the tough lessons that you have to learn when you make it back into the top flight. But again, this shouldn't overshadow the positivity of the two performances that they've put in thus far, should it?
Yeah, so I think, you know, they've only got 1 point, and yeah, they must be sick to their stomach. The fact that they led, I think, the 82 minutes were in front against Marinos, 47 minutes in this game, and you know, they've conceded pit penalties. I think you could definitely sense a bit of nervousness creeping in towards the back end of this game from Verdi, given what had happened the previous week. But yeah, I think a lot of people would have thought Marinos at home, Reds away, they'll lose both of those games comfortably. They've got a point at least, so that's something to build on. And yeah, I mean, it came across on TV like it was an absolutely fantastic atmosphere in the stadium, over 50,000 there. But I mean, as a spectacle, that this game failed to live up to that atmosphere by so much, it was unreal. I think the first half, I'd best describe it as pedestrian, and I think maybe for the big Urawa support, it was worryingly reminiscent of what was, I think, at times dished up in 2023. I think the halftime shot count, the Reds had only one shot and Verdi had three. And I think, yeah, it was really important again for Verdi to get that goal, because they weren't, like, they only had three shots. They weren't as on top as they were against Marinos. But again, there was that feeling like you're not going to hold Urawa to one shot and a half again. So I think you would have expected a bit more of them to come out all guns blazing in the second half. I mean, I expected that in the first half, and it just didn't materialise. And, you know, even the first 50 minutes of the second half, I think I wrote my notes the 59th minute, you know, Urawa losing their way, conditions ripe for a Verdi second. I mean, but Verdi weren't really banging on the door, but they had a couple of half chances. And I remember watching a game, I think it was last year after Reds won the ACL, and they lost 2-0 at home to Sagan Tosu the game after it. And it was a bit similar to this. Reds just didn't get going. It was all flat, and they get picked off a couple of times. And, you know, talking of harsh lessons, Tosu had a half chance from the edge of the box and killed Reds off. Verdi were unable to do it. And, I mean, I don't want to over-egg this change, but I think it was, if it was to identify a kind of key turning point, it was the either, you know, temporary or permanent abandonment of the Yoma Watanabe at left-back experiment. He was moved to right wing, and Ayumu Ohata came on midway through the second half. And Watanabe's done nothing wrong at left-back, but just Ohata came on, you could just see this guy is a left-back who's played with the rest of the defenders. He knows where to stand when he's defending. He knows where to go when he's attacking. And I think in the first 90 seconds he was on, he did more attacking than Watanabe did in the whole game. I think, if from my perspective, I think I'd be playing Ohata from left-back from now on, and use Watanabe further forward. They're still missing Solbakken, was out again, and Maeda didn't play in this game. So I think they're really missing a spark further forward. But I think everything good later in the game for Reds came through Ohata. He was denied late on by Matias. He won the penalty. He was a bit of a live wire. I know Yamakoshi got a touch just before he collided with Ohata, but I didn't really have any complaints myself, because, you know, he doesn't see Ohata behind him. His foot's off the ground, it's late, he's kind of out of control. He takes ball and then he takes the man. So no complaints from me with the penalty. And who else would you want taking the spot kick but Alex Schultz? Yeah, he's kind of metronomic from the spot. But yeah, I think Verdi maybe they'd be gutted with how it went. But taking a point from Reds, I think in the overall scheme of things, this is a point gained. Urawa, yeah, but some questions for them. You're never going to get a free hit as a Reds coach, but I think last week away to San Fretche was as close as one you're going to get given the circumstances. But given that, they would then be expected to come home and shine. And yeah, laboured passing, attack just did not click, didn't get anything really going until the last kind of 10 or 15 minutes, when Verdi were getting a bit nervous and they were kind of pushing forward, made a lot of changes. Yeah, they're still... We're integrating the new players. Some players are still injured. There's a lot more to come from this Red side, but nowhere near good enough on this occasion. They'd be expected to win hands down. They didn't win. The draw was the best they deserved. So, yeah, I'm expecting a lot more from Reds in the coming weeks. I'm sure their fans are too. But I'm sure Ben is an FC Tokyo fan. I don't know how much sympathy you had with Verdy, but it's probably hard not to feel a touch of sympathy for them. But what did you make of their performance? And also Reds, one of our favourites for the title, really spluttering in their home debut in front of a big passionate crowd. What did you make of things on Sunday?
Yeah, just a twinge of empathy for Verdy, but it didn't last long, Johnny. Don't worry about that. But yeah, I mean, they do have to, and I hope they can take a large amount of confidence from both of these first two performances. Yeah, as heartbreaking as they have been, it'll take a lot of character from their players to pick themselves up after the disappointment of losing Leeds so late in both of their first two games. But I think, again, they've showed that they're more than capable of matching good teams at this level. They've shown that in the first two match days. Both teams that I think a number of people expect to finish, well, not only in the top six, but to be right in the thick of the title race. So the fact that they've, more than matched both F. Marinos and Urawa in the first two match days is, they deserve an enormous amount of credit for that. And it's a matter of if they can pick themselves off the floor after this latest disappointment and go again next weekend. But Reds, very much a work in progress. And as you say, the sort of performance that we saw far too often in 2023. And again, Hegmo deserves some time to get things settled in and to get his methods up and running. But, Red supporters, they want their team up towards the top of the table. And, the first couple of performances have not been up to scratch, although, they were decent for large spells against Hiroshima, but ran into the Yuki Ohashi buzzsaw. But, in their home opener, I don't think any clear-minded Reds fan could argue that this just wasn't good enough. So, they'll need a reaction when they go up to Sapporo on Saturday. And, hopefully for them, they will get one. That should be quite an entertaining game. I wonder if it will feature in Johnny's picks of the weekend, as we'll come on to very shortly. But as we wrap things up after match day two, you might notice, listeners, we've been saying teams at the top have 4 points from their first two games. As Dan Orlowitz tweeted on Saturday night, this is the first time since 2005 that no J1 team has won their first two league fixtures. So, there are six teams tied at the top on 4 points. Antlers ever so slightly ahead on goal difference. At the wrong end of the table, Nagoya are the only pointless team through two rounds, and both Grampus and Sapporo are yet to score. So we move on to match day three with nine games being played this Saturday, Johnny. But as you've mentioned, the Gumba Osaka versus Yokohama F. Marinos game, it should have been the other way around. It's scheduled for the Nissan Stadium, has been postponed to early April, midweek, the 10th of April, due to F. Marinos' commitments in the ACL. So, I made a mistake. There are eight games on Saturday, aren't there, and one on Sunday. So, apologies, Johnny. I'm sure you're ready to set me straight on that. So, the previously mentioned Sapporo versus Reds game is the only game on Sunday. That's a lunchtime kickoff. So, what about the eight games then on Saturday? Do we have a Johnny's pick of the match day? Johnny's pick of the match day.
I actually found it quite easy this match day, and it's two teams have impressed us, I think, in the first two games, and that's Machida are hosting Kashima. I know when we talked to Dan last week, there was the bus issue. I believe they're trying to do something to improve the situation this week with more buses. We'll see how that goes, because like we said again last week with Dan, Kashima, like Gamba, they're going to travel there in numbers, that the fans will be there to support their team. And they'll be expecting 3 points, and the Machida fans as well, but buoyed by that win at the Toyota Stadium, they'll have a lot of respect for Kashima as the most successful team in J-League history, but they'd love nothing more than to pick up a first J1 victory against Kashima of all teams. So I think this will be, it's not going to be two teams passing the ball about defence and, not much goal-mouth action. I think it's going to be quite direct, it's going to be quite physical, and I think it's going to be quite entertaining. So I'd struggle to pick a winner in this game. I think there'll be goals. So that's definitely the one I'm looking for. And yeah, I think as you mentioned on the Sunday, there's only one game, Sapporo Urawa. Very, very interesting, because we said with Sapporo, after being hammered 4-0, and despite usually being very high scoring, they haven't scored in their two games this season. A bit of pressure on Misha Petrovic, and he picked up, maybe I think there's a couple of players dropped out of the squad from the first game to the second game, and they've picked up the suspension of Nakamura. So, I mean, what kind of lineups are you going to go for? And Reds, again, yeah, they've played well against Hiroshima, but they've ultimately lost, and they've got a very disappointing performance at home to Verdy. So the onus really is on them to come out and show everyone, all the supporters and everyone watching, but why they have been touted so highly this season. Interesting to see if Sobakin or Maeda play a bit more, or you know, kind of changes that they might make. I know Sean Carroll's never been a fan of like Sekine or Koizumi, if you maybe he's seen enough of them. if they do bring Ohata back to left back, we might see quite a few changes for both sides. So I think that's another fascinating one, that, and the way the teams have played, you'd fancy Urawa to win it, but you'd never bet on a Sapporo game. So yeah, I think Saturday Machida Kashima, and then Sunday Sapporo Urawa. I think another one that caught my eye was FC Tokyo against Vissel Kobe on Saturday. So what do you make of that one, Ben? Is there any other games you would pick out to watch?
Yeah, another one, yeah, contributing to Tokyo's tricky start to the season, but should be an interesting game, and one that, Tokyo will look to pick up their first victory of the season. They're obviously, Kobe coming in a little bit wounded after their disappointing display against Kashiwa. So Tokyo will, I guess, fancy their chances. And, yeah, hopefully they can impose themselves a little bit more on the game than they have in their first two. Well, yeah, I think the other game I'm looking forward to seeing on Saturday, unfortunately for me, it kicks off at the same time. It's a Cerezo hosting Tokyo Verdy. I mean, two teams that we've bigged up quite a bit in the first two match days. And I think, appropriate reasons, they both look good. Obviously, I saw Cerezo firsthand in the first game of the season when Tokyo drew with them 2-2 away. And then, yes, I mean, we all watched the opener at the National Stadium when Verdy was so impressive against F. Marinos, and again, almost left Saitama Stadium with 3 points on Sunday against Reds. So, yeah, for me, that's a fascinating one. And the brief mentions for games between two teams that won for the first time in the 2024 season. At 2 o'clock on Saturday, Iwata host Kashiwa, and then at 3, it's Fukuoka hosting Shonan. So some interesting looking games. No real blockbusters, I wouldn't say, Johnny, but some really interesting ones up and down the slate, with the Saturday's fixtures beginning with 3 games at 2 o'clock, and running through to the 3 games that kick off at 4 with Sapporo and Urawa, the only game on Sunday. All right, Johnny, well, we'll leave it there, just the two of us this week. I think all of our regular club-specific correspondents were probably hiding away in the fetal position after their teams had disappointing results in match day 2. So we've battled on just the two of us, but as always, terrific to chat with you, and looking forward to doing so again after match day 3. You have a nice easy weekend this weekend with your team not in action.
Yeah, I'm not sure what games I'm going to watch this weekend, but yeah, I can kind of relax. And also, coming back to your point about the 2005 season being the last time that that no team won their first two games, I think we all know who won the league that season. So if that's an omen, I'm all for it. But yeah, I'm going to enjoy this weekend. There's no pressure on me, and we have a game less to talk about next week. But hopefully we've got lots of goals and lots of action, and I look forward to talking with you about it next week.
All right, terrific stuff, Johnny. And I'll tell you what, I should throw this nugget in as well. We were cock-a-hoop, of course, about history repeating about Tokyo Verdy and Yokohama F. Marinos, and the result from the first ever J-League game repeating last week. Well, yeah, on Sunday, Verdy and Urawa played a repeat scoreline of their first ever meeting in the first ever J-League season as well. It was in match day 5 in the 1993 season. Verdy took the lead and Urawa equalised, and it finished 1-1. And again, history repeated on Saturday. Unfortunately, Cerezo were weren't involved in the first ever G League season in 1993. But I wonder if we'll be able to scour the record books and find out the first time those two teams ever faced off and what the scoreline was. I'm sure it'll be the same again on Saturday. All right, then. Sorry, listeners, I've held you up for an extra minute there. But, yeah, a little nugget. You know, I like a good stat or two. All right, we'll leave it there. That's it for this episode of the J-Talk podcast. Johnny and I would like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. And listeners, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to review J1 Match Day 3. Speak to you then. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.